Welcome to the Right to Reason podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stanley. Today we are asking two questions. Even if you no longer believe, does religion still have value? And can God cure your herpes?
It's the Right to Reason podcast.
Never know how much I love you. Never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever.
This episode of the Right to Reason podcast is brought to you by our patrons and contributors like me. We have all recognized the value of the unrestrained marketplace of ideas and have decided to make a difference. You can make a difference too. Contribute at patreon.com/right. And learn more about your right to reason at therighttoreason.com. Your activism is appreciated.
Today I'm very excited to be speaking with Erin Burnett at erinburnettauthor.co.uk. That's erinburnettauthor.co.uk. Did I get that right, Erin?
Yes, well done.
Okay. And we also have my old friend, Michael Moore. Michael, glad you're here, sir.
Glad to be here, Robert. Thank you.
Luke Larson, all the way from Canada. How's it going, brother?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so here's
Thanks
the setup.
Thanks for having me back on, Robert.
Absolutely. It's always great talking to you, man. This is, what, your third time?
Yeah.
I think it's number three. Yeah. Okay, so here's the idea. I think everybody's going to appreciate this. So Erin Burnett reached out to me recently. If you want to learn more about her, you can go to her website, but hopefully she can kind of introduce us to what her idea is here and what she was thinking about doing with this podcast. But essentially, she is not a true believer anymore, but she does think religion still has value to it and that we should... would it be fair to say that we should still have religion in our life, Erin? Is that kind of your perspective?
Yes. I don't think anyone should be forced into it. Of course not. But I think it can still have positive effects even in a world that has moved beyond supernatural belief.
Fair enough. And then Luke Larson is... are you a fundamentalist Christian? I know you're a Christian.
No, I wouldn't say I'm fundamentalist, depending on what kind of... There's some bad connotations, some good ones, so...
Yeah.
No, I'd say no.
They don't really use that term in Canada as much, right? Is that more
that's
an American evangelical kind of thing, I guess?
Yeah, but yeah, no, I hold to, you know, biblical inerrancy. I hold to like those like fundamental things like a triune God, but I'm not like going out there crazy using it to spread hate or anything like that, right?
Right, right. You're totally like a peaceful, cool dude, but you are, I would say you're more on the extreme end of the religion, not extreme like you're going out and protesting gay marriages or something extreme. Like you're not a jerk or anything, of course, but like,
no,
like you don't believe in evolution, right? Like you don't believe in...
Oh no I do.
Oh, you do? Okay, I thought you were out there.
Yeah, and I do have gay friends. There's no reason not to. As a Christian, I wouldn't do that in my lifestyle because I don't think a Christian should do that, but there's no they're people, you know, love them, respect them, I want them as my friends, kind of thing.
All right. Well, I totally misjudged you then. My mistake. But and then the last member of our team here, Michael, he's just a goddamn atheist, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Happily so.
So I thought maybe...
Raised by two lovely people who endowed me with no belief in anything, so, yeah.
I thought, man, this would be really cool because we have three different levels of faith. Luke on, let's say, level one, right? A believer and believes religion has great value, of course, his own faith in particular. Erin, a non-believer. Is that recently, Erin, that you became a non-believer?
Yeah, it was kind of like death by a thousand cuts over about the course of 5 years, but
I think
it's only in the past year or so that I've been out about it.
Wow, you should be in the angry phase. The atheists, like the first 5 years of atheism.
I think I'm just getting over the angry phase.
Okay, fair enough.
People with those accents can never sound that angry.
Yeah.
Unless they're coming at you with a broken bottle, then...
Oh my,
absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so they're right in the middle's Erin, and then on the far other end, you know, level three, let's say, Michael's going to be a strong, strong atheist that believes religion actually is detrimental to society. Would I be saying that correctly, Mike?
I'm actually quite sympathetic to, at this point, what I'm assuming Erin's proposition is. I see that, you know, because I remember in my 20s when I officially sort of threw out all sort of spiritual belief. I did for a while sort of meander around and sort of got in touch with a lot of, you know, for example, at that point in time, Native American sort of shamanic drumming. I looked into like Robert Bly and the men's movement kind of going on at that time. I'm talking here the early 90s. So I can respect the obvious need for ritual as an organizing factor. But no, I have no, remotely no sort of spiritual otherworldly belief. You know, I firmly, you know, look at myself and then look at other primates and just see myself as another type of primate that's along its own evolutionary track.
So, Aaron, you want to get us started? Like, what would people find at aaronburnettauthor.co.uk? And what is your mission statement, more or less? What is your goal here?
So I'm a former fundamentalist. Wow. And when I still was part of the church, I wrote a children's book, which is, it's kind of like a fantasy novel with a Christian message. Even though I don't quite obviously believe the doctrine anymore, I still advertise it on my website because I don't think it's awful or anything. I also do a lot of stuff about autism and religion because that was what my university dissertation was on. And then finally in my blog, the blog is where I rant and ramble about religion in general.
that's fascinating. Autism and religion. What's the connection there? What's the overlap there?
So I'm on the autism spectrum, and I found when I was doing my research, there is loads of studies proving that autistic people are way, way, way more likely to be atheists than the general population. Mm-hmm. And there's several reasons why people think that might be. One reason is that we tend to be quite empirical in our thinking. So basically, if I can't empirically experience it, then it's meaningless. Other reasons is they found out that we don't tend to think teleologically. So that means we don't tend to see overarching meaning behind events. They just are. And of course, some of the research is more practical things like how churches can be more welcoming for people who are different, etc. So that was a fun project.
You should tell her about what you do, Mike.
Well, I'm an occupational therapist. I mean, that's how I pay my bills. And I worked over 10 years in different school systems, primarily focusing on children with autism. Yeah, I've got a lot of experience with a lot of those different issues. So, yeah. Yes, and I wonderful experiences with young children with Asperger's coming up to me and sharing just blurtly kind of, you know, I was taking a church this week and I just don't buy any of this.
Wow.
and just saying these things. And, you know, here I am, you know, and I work for a school system and I've got to really watch and be very, very, very careful of how I say things and what I say. And, you know, because here in the United States, of course, you know, people are crazy and so happy. So it was quite fascinating to me.
Do you guys think, and I'm sorry I'm leaving you in the dark here, Luke. I want to jump to you real quick, but do you two think that autistic people are just a little more inclined to just see things as brass tacks?
Well, also, too, let's back up again. You know, me and Robert, we've spoken about this many times. I think, you know, when you use the word autism, it's such a broad term, and it's a broad spectrum. But, yeah, I think there's the germane part of your question is like, yes, they're, as Eric has been speaking, they tend not to think very teleologically. Mm. So they tend to, their connections are very sort of, you know, 2 + 2 = 4, very, very concrete. And so they tend not to have that level of magical thinking that when you indoctrinate young children into sort of those, that type, that style of religious belief, it's much harder for it to really take hold.
Would you agree with that, Aaron? Would you say that we're picking up what you're putting down pretty well?
Yeah, I think so. I think other than, because I was raised in Northern Ireland, which is the Bible Belt of the UK, I think if I hadn't been raised religious, I doubt I would have got into it at all, to be honest. But here I am.
All right, Luke. Why should Aaron believe in God? What is she getting wrong, man? What is she missing other than the sweet Lord Jesus Christ?
Like, that's one thing I want to make clear. I don't think an atheist or a non-believer or a different religion is stupid or anything like that. It's just in my life, I've been presented with, I would say, some empirical evidence and then enough, like, of course, raised into it, just surrounded by it. But where I've seen it to be, like, under scrutinizing it, I found it to be true. And lots of times I just find people, they haven't had the experiences I've had, or they haven't seen enough, right? Because I don't believe you should believe in it just to make yourself feel good. There's a term that's called a moralistic therapeutic deism, where it's you believe in God because it gives you morals, makes you feel good, and God's far off. And that's just not what I think it should be. That's not good. Like, I think you should investigate it. And if you investigate it and think it's not true, you shouldn't believe in it. For myself, I follow Christianity because not only have I found it to be the only logical, that works so logically, but it's also I respect the God in the religion, because it's about having a relationship with that God and deity and whatever it is, right? I don't want to bash you guys. I do have my cousin is autistic. I have a lot of friends. I did Special Olympics for several years, working with them. They're great. I love working and just talking with people of different thought processes, different people ideologies. So yeah, I'm not going to bash any of you guys. I do want to bring a case out if you guys want and show that, you know, it's not bad. It's not a magical thing to be a Christian or any religion.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Well, yeah,
Robert, yeah. I'm so sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, please.
That are painfully nice and don't want to fight.
No. Go ahead.
My bad, Robert. No.
Have any of you ever listened to Skeptics and Seekers?
Yeah. I love that show with David, right?
Yeah. They are very, very good at getting guests who absolutely fight each other. It's amazing.
I went on there and David and I teamed up on Dale Glover, I think his name was. Is that right, Aaron?
When I was on it, it was only the two Davids.
Okay, maybe they got a new guy now. Were you on fairly recently?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So it used to be a skeptic and a seeker is what they called it. Like, the seeker was the Christian and the skeptic was David. And now I guess David's got a new co-host. Dale left. He got ticked off with David. Dale was the Christian. I've debated Dale twice now. And you're right about David. He'll get the two guests really going. He knows how to instigate, but you know, in a respectful and intelligent way, of course. But yeah, I'm with you 100%.
I've got a question for Lucas. How were you raised? Were you raised in a religious family?
Yeah, they were both Christian. My mom was Catholic. My dad was Protestant. So I was raised Catholic, and then from there we moved on, became Protestant. But outside of that, like all my extended family, all my cousins, all that, none of them are. Like, I'd go to church like every couple weekends kind of thing, but, you know, soccer games or whatever. So it wasn't like a huge, you need to do this. But yeah, it was definitely there.
Okay. So you were raised, and forgive my word choice, but this is kind of my go-to. And if it's, I apologize for my inarticulateness.
Okay.
But do you maybe suspect that maybe you were primed to have these beliefs from a young age, from a young impressionable age before your frontal lobe became fully developed in other parts of your brain and critical thinking, you were primed to basically have these beliefs?
Well, yeah, no, so I do believe that the way you're raised, not just Christian, but let's say you're raised like in your family, there was no belief. I think you were primed to follow that as well.
No, that's not true. That's not true. My parents, if I'm to speak thoroughly about it, it's a very complex situation. They just did not indoctrinate me into any specific belief. They each, though, if I look back, clearly had their own separate upbringings and struggled with a certain amount of belief either way. But I honestly can't tell you at any point in time what their beliefs were. Now, they're no longer here, so that's why I speak about them in the past tense.
Sorry.
Oh, dude, I'm 50. They died a long time ago. It's a long time ago, man. But they just simply, I managed to grow up in a household where I gained through example of values of how to treat other human beings. And I know my parents had a history and had connections to different religious beliefs. I was not indoctrinated into it. That's a very different thing. My parents never used the word atheist. They never really spoke about it overtly. Okay. It was a very different thing. I was very lucky in that I actually, when I hit my teens and I encountered other people that had these beliefs, I actually feel like I had kind of an objective sense to kind of try it out. And I did for a while as a teenager, experimented with those things, because as a teenager, that's what you begin to do. And I went to, you know, and also to are talking the 1980s, and I don't, and you both are young, but the 1980s in the United States, especially the Midwest, it was just the evangelicals were just on 11. We're talking about book burnings. We're talking about the satanic panic. We're talking about burning rock albums and all of that. And there I was in the middle of it, being a young rock musician. And it was a very different time.
But to that point, Luke, would you be able to answer his original question, though? Like, and if I can add to it, don't you think it's a pretty big coincidence that you happen to be raised with the one, you know, like, what are they, like 4,000 or something like that religions even currently? That doesn't even count that you lived in the exact time that you would get this version of your faith, of Christianity, right? Because it has changed a little bit over the years, but you really were lucky.
Well, let's get into this, because I think I know where we're going with it. When I was younger, when growing up, I was in a Christian community, right? So, yeah, of course, when I was a kid, I consider myself Christian. And it wasn't until, and I know I slightly talked to you about this, Robert, but it wasn't until like a couple years ago, last year, and a little bit in the year before that, was I really questioning and pushing. And so, yes, at the beginning, I was a Christian because my parents were a Christian. And it wasn't until the past couple years where I really started questioning things. And like how, for myself, it was the church that was the biggest problem. Seeing the hypocrisy or seeing the hate, if this is really true, if they are so-called filled with the Holy Spirit and they're supposed to be changed, why are they acting like this? So I spent the next, like I was in Bible college. I dropped out right after, midway through.
Well, so, let me before you continue, let me ask Aaron real quick, because I feel like we're leaving her out of this. Would you say that what Luke is describing is beneficial, though? Because to me, like while I'm hearing this, I'm thinking this is everything that's wrong with religion right now. Even, you know, Luke fully well-intentioned what he's saying, but it.
Like, no, I find that this is what's wrong with the church in many times. Like, I'm not fighting that. I think the religion is still true, but I think the church is definitely broken.
But Aaron
does not do its job.
Aaron sees it the other way. She sees the benefit of the church, but doesn't see the benefit of the faith.
I mean, I know the faith can benefit plenty of people. I just don't have it. although perhaps the type of church that I'm claiming is beneficial is a church which is much more of a broad church and more theologically open. I agree that the more theologically evangelical churches tend to be much more harmful.
They're downright toxic. I mean, I'll state that as someone growing up in a sort of an adjacent existence with them. I find them just hateful and toxic to this day.
Luke, I cut you off earlier. You were going to explain or finish your explanation on the highly coincidental fact that you arrived at the correct faith.
Well, for example, just because you were raised in knowing something or believing something does not make that thing false.
No. But it is huge. It is a huge coincidence, right?
It's not huge in the part of the world I live. That's not a huge coincidence. But let's talk about this. Is it just coincidence or is it actually true? And for me, like I've mentioned before, Robert, on the podcast, I've had things happen to my own body, like a miracle happened to myself. And because of that, and because of other things, like, of course, I've done a lot of research. I debate and things like that, and I like to defend the faith. So I've learned in that section. But for me, probably the biggest things were the miracles in my life.
I got a quick question. So when you say you experience miracles,
just, here it comes.
Can you go through? Yeah. Can you go through and explain just
this
one of those miracles?
This one's bit peculiar, Mike.
I said on the podcast last time. So like I said, I was in Bible college. But before I went to Bible college, I had a girlfriend, and we started having sex. So in my opinion, like I should not do that. Premarital sex is not right. But like I was doing that, and I was getting further away from God, and she had gone through stuff in her past, and she had herpes, and so I contracted it as well, right? And so I had, like, scars and stuff. Like, I know this sounds weird, guys, but just follow with me for a sec.
No, it's
so
cool.
I had scars and scabs and stuff like that and didn't feel the best. One day I was in the shower, and it wasn't like I was thinking about God or anything, but I was just looking down. I was kind of just breaking down because, like you said, and, like, I do believe that lots of, like, God does, not only do I believe he's true, but he does make you feel better, right? And religion does help give you a cause. And so I was feeling causeless. I was feeling like without value, and I was kind of just breaking down, right? Didn't say sorry, God, didn't do anything like that, but I was in the shower and I looked down, and as I looked, all my scars started washing away, and I don't have any scars, I don't have any scabs, I have nothing. To my knowledge, my herpes, which is incurable, it's gone. Didn't take any treatment or anything. I broke up with my girlfriend. I went to Bible college.
Luke, could we say to all the ladies out there that Luke Larson is clean?
I am clean. Yes, let's say that again.
Anybody
let's
listening?
Yeah, Luke, you're 20 years old, is that correct?
Yes, I am.
So that's no offense to you and to your story.
No, of course.
But that type of healing with, you know, those types of viruses, and there's a range of herpes viruses, they can go underground into various tissues, and you could be, you know, non-communicative of those types of viruses for 10, 20, 30 years or so. But if you go through like some type of stressor in your life, or if your immune system takes a huge down, it could reassert itself and create some problems and health issues. Mm-hmm.
But the problem was I was stressed then, like that, and yet it left. And not only, I'm not saying, I'm not using this to say you should be a Christian. I'm saying this is one of the things which reaffirmed that. And like, it's not just this one, but.
No, I hear your authenticity and your voice, and I respect that. However, I don't think that meets the criteria of an actual miracle from sort of a medical standpoint.
Yeah, and I'm not like, this is what I'm saying. I'm saying at the moment, while in this kind of section of life, of what I was going through, and yet how this was able to bring me back to God in some sense. It wasn't the last thing. There's other things too, but in some sense, it started me back. That's one gosh darn coincidence that I left while I was stressed, brought me back to the point where I wanted to try and see what was more, right? It gave me hope again. And like you said, it could just be, maybe it comes back in something like that. But to my knowledge, it's gone.
That's my biggest fear with you, is that it does come back. Like, if you had it, you still have it.
Yes. But we're walking around with hundreds of thousands of viruses in our bodies at all times. Yeah.
Thanks for that, Mike. Thanks for freaking everybody out.
Don't touch your face. Don't touch your face.
My biggest fear for you is when this comes back, that you're going to feel like you've done something wrong or that God is judging you.
I don't view God like that, though. That's the thing. So if we want to talk, and if it does, I'd love to talk to you guys again, but I'm not making a case for you guys. I'm not trying to convert you or anything like that. I'm simply saying, here's one, because you asked for one. Here is one of the things that I've seen God do in my life. And I know, I do believe in, like, God's able to do what we'd call supernatural things. So it's like, for me, it's not out of line, but I know it'd be hard to kind of reconcile that with a different worldview kind of thing, right? So I'm not fighting the case here.
Could I jump in on the whole miracle thing?
Yeah.
So that was actually a big reason why I ended up losing faith in the traditional sense. First of all, I am not casting doubt in your experience.
I'm essentially
pitting experience against experience, but like, I have spinal arthritis and it sucks. And I went to theological college as well. There were quite a few times actually where people dramatically prayed for me to be healed publicly, which was mortifying.
And
it never worked. And also, not just for me, I remember a really hard case where a kid, I didn't personally know them, but they were quite well known in the church community, got like horrendous brain cancer. And we were praying fervently every single day. And, you know, every time something good happened, oh, it's because we were praying. And every time something bad happened, oh, we just got to pray harder. And these things, it just seems God is horrendously arbitrary, that he will go and heal someone's herpes scars, but he won't help a kid with a brain tumor.
Thank you.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to hear what's going on in your life and that child's.
It wasn't my intention for all of us to team up on you, but
yeah, no, it's okay. No, but it's conversation, right?
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to ask Erin more about why she thinks religion is so beneficial, because I might even disagree there. But just to wrap up that point, can you at least comment to God's arbitrary way of healing people? Like, I'd never see him help amputees, for example.
Yeah.
He's never once fixed an amputee that's on record. But, you know, he'll do these other things that seem a little more mysterious, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think it'd be any less mysterious if he cured someone's arm, like, healed someone and gave them their arm back. I don't think that's less mysterious. I think that's pretty crazy. But
that would be very mysterious if someone got their arm grew back.
Yeah.
if a primate grew back an arm, that would be really, really, that would be crazy.
Yeah. I know where you're going, and I'll talk about this. One, I'm not God. So I can't say why he does what he does. But I'll give you two things to maybe think about. One, if you were someone who had a view of 10 years, you knew what was going to happen the next 10 years if you did one action. And then there's someone who would know what happened in the next like 10 days and if they chose to do something. So like, let's say whether or not I slap my brother in the face. If I knew what the consequences were for 10 days and 10 years, do you think I'd make the same decision? Or maybe something more complicated, right? But for me, it's if God has perspective of eternity or all life, and he knows what the consequences for all things are, he has a much better bet of making the right decision than I would. And I probably just don't know what I would do because I'm not that smart. So with a being that I would consider all-knowing and all-present, like being at all time, I think he would be able to do things that I wouldn't understand how he did it or his choices, right? And now that's not a defense. I'm not saying that it's good that you have what you have. I'm not saying that. I'm simply giving a negative apologetic to here's something to think about maybe. But again, I am so sorry to hear Erin, and
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
but that sounds just like classic projection and rationalization. And one could, you can turn yourself in circles all day long with various personal anecdotes with that sort of statement, saying, well, you know, you don't know God's plan, and if you had the imagination of God, and if you knew all of this, then
well, this is why we say that.
It just sounds like you could add that to anything that happens to you in life and still get that same statement and result.
It's not quite the same, because there are things that God could do that would kind of be a defeater, right? Like if someone attributed this to God, that like wouldn't make sense. Like if God did something that broke his own character, I would say, well, if it says that in your holy book, then your religion is false. For example, I'll use one in Islam. In Islam, it says God is all just, but it also says God is all merciful. And the way he forgives people is that if you do more right than wrong, he will get rid of your sins. Like it talks about the measuring of it. Now that Allah logically does not make sense, because if he just forgives people just without any like judgment, then he's not all just. The reason why the Christian Yahweh, the Christian God, doesn't come up with that problem is because of Jesus on the cross. If he pays the debt, and God offers it through him, forgiveness through him, well, then the debt has been paid. So it's not like judgment has been given. So in that sense, even though God is all just and all forgiving, it's not contradictory. He has that through Christ, it works. So that's a logical thing you can look at. Like, okay,
sure.
Just making up random things, or does it actually make sense logically?
I think you'd have a hard time rationalizing the psychological makeup of Yahweh in the Old Testament and the way God is described in the New Testament. But I'd hate to talk about that because I'm not drunk at the time. and I really and it's only 1:41 p.m. in the afternoon. Yeah. And I have to at least wait till 3 p.m. or I feel bad about myself.
Right.
It's 7 p.m. here, so like go
cheers, Aaron. Have at it, sweetie.
Well, I was actually going to ask Aaron before you respond to that, Luke.
We can get off this for now, I don't mind going on that topic later on.
But, oh, my head hurts if we have to talk about the Bible, man. I'm going to slash my wrist.
7 p.m.
I'm going to slash my wrist, I swear to God.
Let me ask Aaron here. Whenever you defend religion or faith, you're hearing this right now firsthand, how destructive it is, at least as it would appear to the three of us. And nothing against you, Luke, but just the way what you're saying to us, we're listening like, oh boy, this guy, he can rationalize anything. And now he's...
Can you, like, the destructive thing, can you give me, like, what did I say that was more destructive, just so I know?
Because you can rationalize anything. That could be used against others, and often is. And that was my question to Aaron. How can she defend religion or faith when it can be so dangerous?
Well, actually, you can't rationalize everything. Like I said, if it doesn't make sense with, like, being like, if it breaks something that God said not to do, you can't rationalize that kind of thing.
Oh my God! Talk to any member of various cults. Like, there's a wonderful documentary series on Amazon right now called Seduced. Yeah, you should check it out. It's amazing, about the Nexium cult.
I heard about that. He even referenced Islam.
It's amazing.
Islam's a perfect example of rationalizing things.
Or Trump supporters. Trump supporters can rationalize things, too.
I don't think they rationalize things, guys. I don't think they thought that through.
Who, Trump supporters? No, they rationalize stuff, trust me. They rationalize everything.
I think religion can only be useful if it modernizes with time, like everything else.
If it's keeping up with the time, I think it inevitably does that. Those are the religions that we currently have are the ones that could change and advance over time. All the ones that we don't have are the ones that couldn't do it. So I'm with you there, but the ones that we have now are still a problem.
Yes, which is why I think I see my mission in life, that's a bit grand for a 21-year-old, but to try and change from within as opposed to just leaving. I mean, I have been tempted to leave, but for reasons I can explain, I've decided to stay in. I think we need people like, you know, John Shelby Spong is the most famous example, but people who try and drag Christianity kicking and screaming into the 21st century. You know, even Richard Dawkins, the atheist of atheists, said he was a Church of England atheist because he still appreciated the art and the culture of the Church of England, even though he didn't actually believe the doctrine. So it's that sort of relationship to religion that I have. I see it as culture. It's an art form. It's a good opportunity to meet people and just have community.
I still listen to hymn music. I miss the worship time. That's one thing I really miss about being a Christian, was worshiping God with other like-minded believers, you know?
Mm-hmm. I love my Sunday mornings off, let me tell you. I don't. I love my Sunday mornings off, and I will not give that away for anything.
Hey, you're in COVID. You can just watch that online service whenever you want. So it's open to you.
Oh, my God. It makes my head hurt if I have to listen to people talk about the Bible. I get a headache and a migraine, and there's not enough beer in the world. There just isn't. It just sounds like people babbling. I'd rather, the Lord of the Rings makes more sense to me than anything written in the Bible. It's poorly written.
What do you think is one of the biggest things that don't make sense?
The biggest one. What is the biggest
literally
one?
all of it.
No, come
it's
on.
Just, it's you gotta... no, seriously. We only pay it deference because we've been primed and educated and indoctrinated.
Well, just give me a couple then if it's old.
I'm so far beyond this argument, I can't even start. I'm 50 years old. I left the stuff in the dust 30 years ago.
Well, it's not for argument, just so I can look into it myself, like later on.
No. That's not what
literally just comparing it to any other good literature. Literally like comparing it to, like, everything.
You know, Madame
Bavaria, I just pulled that out of my butt. I can think of anything else. Oh, my God, the works of Erich Fromm. Who's a mid-century, 20th-century psychologist. Oh, my God. What am I reading lately? Let me just pick up
Are you saying that, like, you just like reading it better? Or is there, like...
No.
It reads miserably. I mean, it's a miserable document to have to slog through. You can literally project anything into it and get anything you want out of it. It's so painful. It's so painful to hear someone quote from it because I'm just talking to an indoctrinated zombie.
I actually... I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I have that problem too when I listen to some people.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for being honest about that. I really am. Jonathan Glover. If you really want to read something horribly profound and important, Jonathan Glover. He's an ethicist and philosopher, and he wrote a really good book called Humanity, The Moral History of the 20th Century. I've read it about five times because I found it so profound. He psychologically broke down the different cultures of Nazi Germany, Mao Zedong's China, and Stalinist Russia.
Okay.
And it's a fascinating book that I recommend everybody read to just understand the world around them and be more culturally literate.
Yeah, of course. I think like everyone just needs to, like you said, just learn, you know, look into history, look what's actually going on. Because I think that's the huge problem, whether in the church or outside the church. I think that's like a big problem in our world today.
We definitely agree on that. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we beat up on Luke a little more than we should, but but it was... That was a pretty wild miracle story, to be fair. But
thanks, Robert.
But either way, Luke, what's your last point you'd want to leave us with? And then maybe if Mike and Aaron could follow up thereafter.
Religion has done some awful things, whether it's indoctrination, whether it's some crusade, or whether it's just making people not think. But that doesn't mean it's wrong. It doesn't mean it can do great things and has done great things. Like with medicine and education and sciences, but not just that, with pushing people to learn more and to investigate. And I think it should leave off with that. Continue to investigate with both sides and never close your mind off and let the truth kind of guide you that way.
I primarily define myself as a humanist. That is my ethos and my ethics, basically. Atheism is simply just a byproduct of not believing in either of the three sort of dominant monotheistic religions out there. It's sort of a boring question to me. I'm actually a post-theist. I'm just really not interested in it anymore. It sort of all sounds like meaningless drivel. And atheism itself is basically it says what we don't believe in. And that's all it is. It's not a positive truth claim. So from my point of view, I really bring myself into situations really trying to be from a humanist point of view.
So I argue for a form of religion that is beyond theism. So essentially, I am fully prepared to admit that I am just cherry picking the good parts and getting rid of the bad parts, because that's what we have to do. So I would like Christianity to become more like Judaism, in the sense that Reconstructionist Jews tend not to believe any of the supernatural stuff, but they still keep the community and the culture and the traditions of Judaism alive. I think we would benefit if we could do the same for Christianity.
Fantastic. Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate all your perspectives and your insight.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was great being here.
Yes, it's very enjoyable.
Thank you.
Thank you to Aaron, Michael, and Luke. Thank you to Dave Blair at DaveBlairMusic.com. Thank you to FeedSpot.com for promoting The Right to Reason to the Top 10 Atheist Podcast. Thank you to our patrons. You can support this broadcast at patreon.com/right and learn more at therighttoreason.com. Next week, we're talking to my new favorite author, D.B. Ramsey. His book is titled, Speaking of God, We Don't Know Shit. Between now and then, remember that you have the right to reason. Come on now, this is virtual reality. This has been the Right to Reason Podcast. We're living in a crazy world. Come on now, futures made of virtual insanity. Now always seem to be governed by this dog. We have more used to this twisting our new technology. Oh, now there is no sound. We live underground.